This whole interview is over. This is, I can't go on any further.
This is it. Oh, you're getting upset about poop jokes now? Oh,
yeah.
I'm Dr. Todd.
And I'm the amazing Bibic.
This is Magician's Workshop. The Amazing Bibic is a seasoned magician, comedian, and entertainer with over 40 years of experience.
Mostly oregano.
40 years of experience, amazing audiences across the country. Known for his quick wit, charm, and polished sleight of hand and eyebrows.
Polish. Go ahead.
Jeff blends comedy and magic into unforgettable performances that's equal parts laugh out loud funny and jaw-droppingly mystifying. From lounges in Detroit to cruise ships on the high seas, Jeff has done it all. Yes. But he's best known for his work in Chicago, where he's become a fixture in the city's vibrant magic scene. As the house magician at the renowned Chicago Magic Lounge, Jeff performs regularly for packed crowds, keeping the classic Chicago style of close-up magic alive and thriving. Whether he's headlining private events, corporate functions, or sold-out theaters, Jeff brings decades of experience, a deep respect for the craft, and an infectious love of entertaining that makes every show feel personal. For aspiring magicians, Jeff is a living example of how dedication, originality, and personality can turn a childhood fascination into a full-blown magical career. Everybody, the amazing Bibic!
Hey! Thank you for that incredible introduction. Is that AI? That is good.
It was a little bit both, a little bit me, little bit ChatGPT.
It's a pleasure. I'd like to raise, and since you're having a drink, I'd like to raise a glass with you too. I think it's only appropriate, you know, being a bar magician, I think I'd like to have a little champagne with you.
Oh, lovely. Isn't
it? Thank you.
Yeah, it looks great.
That gag doesn't play. This glass is this big.
Oh, I can't tell. Like, literally,
that's too bad.
I'm a very small person, so that looks like a lot to me. I'm a cheap date. That would put me on the ground.
You get used to working the bars.
That's true. I worked at a bar once, but I couldn't drink because I'm too lightweight. So
yeah, we don't. Really,
I knew that if I tried, I would just end up ruining everything.
We have a no drinking policy. I never have any kind of cocktails while I'm performing.
That makes sense, because it probably wouldn't go very well.
It doesn't.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so this is going off the rails already, but I love it. So okay, I'm gonna try to get through some questions and see but you know what? This is you're the co-host. Mm-hmm. If you feel like you need to take it in a different direction, you are you're good to go.
All right.
You performed your first
already
show.
It's going south. I don't know what other kind of direction you want it to go.
It's going down. I'm gonna try to rein this in. All right, we got this. All right. You performed your first magic show at just 9 years old.
That's
true. What do you remember from your early performances, and how did they shape your love of magic?
Well, can we go back even before that? You know, people
go back. Let's go to the earliest that you can go.
And although I've been joking around, this is an actually true story, actual true story. When I was in the first grade, a magician came to our school and he picked me out of the audience. And he had a strange little handkerchief that he made into a bag. And he said, "Reach inside, kid. Whatever you find, you can keep." And when I pulled out my letter, grabbed my hand, it was full of candy. True story. Later on, I learned what the trick was. But that's when I said, I want to be a magician, man. I know. If you know magic, you can make all the candy you want. So it's a long time ago. We could give candy to kids back then. Nowadays, don't take the candy, kids. But so then when I started reading magic books. And that's where I found out the real secret of magic. You got to buy the candy first.
Oh, boo.
And hide it real good. So anyway, I started doing magic shows. Yeah, so and I was in the fourth grade, and I went to this Catholic school in Detroit, and this nun was retiring, and they gave a little party for her, and three or four of us each did a magic trick. And
oh, wow.
I got up for my little moment on stage, and I was going to do the rope through the neck. And I said, I got to be careful. If I'm not careful, I could lose my head over this trick, which, you know, it's pretty good material when you're nine.
That's really good. Yeah.
So I got a big laugh, and I said, magic and
there's
laugh.
There's some to this. Yeah.
I like it. Yeah.
And you were hooked.
Yep, that was it.
When did it become more than, was there a particular moment that you knew that was going to be your career? Was it like literally 9 years old, like I'm just going to do this forever?
Well, when I was, so that was, you know, probably what, fourth grade, I guess. I think it was in fifth and sixth grade. I was collecting stamps. So that was a different hobby altogether. And and then in seventh grade, I went to a different school. And it was a kid in my class, and he was carrying this little beat-up suitcase. I said, hey, man, what do you got in there? He said, oh, it's magic tricks. I said, no kidding. I used to do some magic. You know, what do you got there? So we started hanging around together. And this is actually a pretty good story.
As magicians do.
Scott, how much time do we have, Todd? Because this is a long story.
As much time as you want.
All right. So my friend, Mark McGuig, can I use his name? I don't know if it's a, if he's not giving me clearance to use his name.
You say whatever you want.
Mark McGuig, boop. Mark McGuig, beep.
I can beep you out if you want me
to. Okay. So it turns out there were four of us in the seventh grade that liked magic tricks. And so we formed a magic club. We called ourselves the Brothers of Magic because we knew there was an IBM. We already knew about that. So Mark McGuig, Mark McGuig, shit, not McGuig, he's the best baseball guy. Mike. I've known too many Mikes and Marks in my time. But I'm just trying to make M's meet here. Now, listen, anyway, Mark McGuigan had the magic catalog from Abbott's. And so our magic club, the goal of our meetings was to meet at his house and look through the Abbott's magic catalog and try to figure out tricks. And in the Abbott's magic catalog, they talked about the convention they have every year in Colon, Michigan. And so we decided that our goal as a magic club was to go to the magic convention in Colon, Michigan. So in 1974, Mark McGuigan's parents loaded us up into their car and drove us 2.5 hours to Colon, Michigan and dropped us off. And we're 13. I was 13 at the time. And so they had no hotels in Colon, Michigan. They have still to this day, there's no hotels. So people would rent out houses, parts of their house or rooms in their house. So I landed, Abbott's Magic Company would help me set that up. So they set me up with a place. I, you know, we didn't know where it was. So it was this old lady's front porch. She lived out on the lake. It was a screened-in porch, and she had six cots set up. So there were four of them for us boys from Detroit, and then two other cots. And the two other cots were occupied by two other kids from Detroit that we didn't know. And this one kid's name was Al, and he was there with his little brother, Joey. And so that turned out to be Al the Only. Maybe you've heard of Al the Only. He's been around a long time.
Yeah, I've heard of Al the Only.
Yes. So we became, well, we didn't become friends there, actually. We didn't like each other there. But then he sent me a Christmas card later that year, and we became friends and been pals ever since. So, long story, Todd. This I've been going to the Abbott's Magic Convention since 74. And so is
Al. I heard they had to, because of the way that they were, because of that town, they had to actually split the town in half and change it. So now it's only a semicolon.
Oh, they were planning on doing that, but the city council voted against it.
Mm.
So.
I had to try. I can't keep up.
A joke, so they wouldn't do
it. Yeah, the clown just died somewhere.
Just stay. That's if you stay in one part of town, that's all.
So,
have you ever been to Colon, Todd? Have you been there?
No, I've never been there.
It's great. It's an amazing experience. Yeah.
So yeah, this upcoming year is going to be the year of going to all of the shows I can. So that's going to be my plan.
Yes.
So I know that you went to school for communication.
True. Theater. Yep.
Yeah, that's right. Theater and communication.
Well, you know, they changed the name of it while I was in college.
So when you
was communications,
yeah, exactly. Well, so how did that? You were still doing magic at the time, or
yes? Kind of... So I did theater in high school, and I actually didn't think I'd go to college. I thought I was going to be a magician full time right away. And luckily for me, when I was a senior or late junior, we went out to Eastern Michigan University in Ypsilanti, Michigan, and we saw a show out there. At the theater department, I said, "Oh man, this is cool! I want to come here." So I applied there and I got accepted and I auditioned and I didn't get a scholarship, but I went anyway. And so, yeah, so I got, 4 years in college doing theater. So that was great. In the summer times during college, I worked various places. I worked a amusement park the first summer of college, Cedar Point in Ohio. I actually ran the magic shop there. So that was pretty cool.
Oh, very cool. Yeah. That's a great way to get practice in.
It was amazing. Yeah. And I sold more than they had sold ever before.
Wow, I bet.
And then the following year in college, I hooked up with a resort in Wisconsin, a little place called Nipissing. And Nipissing is a little world unto its own. It's sort of like a cruise ship, but it's landlocked. It's sort of like the Catskills. It was a all-inclusive resort with entertainment. And people would go there for a week or over the weekend. And there would be nonstop activities for them, entertainment at night, food in the dining room. So that was a pretty incredible experience. I did a lot of shows there.
Wow.
So, yeah, that was really quite a substantial part of my development as a magician, because I was able to do, I was doing 4 or 5 shows a week and doing other things as well. I was an activities director. So, but we had a lot of great magicians that came through there. Don Allen came through there. And he did some shows there for the adults for one summer. And so I got to hang, spend time with him and learn from him. I, still to this day, I still have things that I remember that he taught me. And one of the most important things is when you're up on stage doing a show, especially if there's some sort of a step, is that you always help your assistants on and off stage. Because we don't think about it. We're on stage all the time. But these people may have never been on a stage before in their life. So just so they don't trip, you just give a little handout and it's a little more professional and you help them up. So anyway, learned that from Don Allen. I just told somebody that last week at the lounge. I said, this is a big step here. Make sure you help people up.
Nice.
So yeah, it was a great, great experience.
So you also performed close up in Detroit lounges and restaurants. How did you transplant to there? Like, how did that come about?
Well, that was through my pal Alvy Only. Al the Only was working some restaurants. He's a couple of years older than I am. He's 2 years older. So he was already working restaurants. And one of his places wanted to go 7 days a week. Mm. Carlos Murphy's. It was a Mexican-Irish place.
Oh, yes.
Kind of a corporate mishmash place. But they did really well. It was a very popular spot for several years. And we were doing their magic there 7 nights a week. So that's kind of how I first got into doing restaurants, and certainly learn a whole lot there about people and dealing with people and, what their needs are, what their desires are.
How do you approach a table that doesn't know that you're on your way? Because I know with the Magic Lounge, they're expecting it. If it, at a restaurant that's not the Magic Lounge, how do you approach them?
Isn't that the universal question? For restaurant workers.
I never figured that out. I just dealt with the looks.
Well, what I believe about it is that in order to be successful at it, and of course this has come around with, at the time I'm sure I was awkward and, weird. I mean, Carlos Murphy's especially, people knew it was there. They did advertise it and had signs in the lobby and stuff. So it wasn't totally unexpected. But nevertheless, that's the whole thing about restaurant work. No matter how long you've been doing it, every single table you approach is a cold call.
Hmm.
And they might deny you, and they might not be interested, and they might think you're the greatest thing they've ever seen. So what I have learned over the years is that, first of all, you have to be just kind of a pleasant person that can go up to a table and say, good evening, welcome. Are you having a good time this evening? Did you get enough to eat? So these days I approach that kind of work more as like a magic host almost. Mm-hmm. So people will sort of, confuse you for a manager, but that's okay.
I mean, if you're a manager and then you whip out a deck of cards.
I can't take anything off their bill, but that's okay. I'm more of a representative of the restaurant. So I guess my point is that you have to be able to approach a table and greet them without necessarily instantly doing magic.
Hmm. Okay.
Because if you greet people one-on-one as humans, they're more likely to respond. If you just go up and say, hey, you want to buy a used car? I say, who are you? And why are you at my table? I'm, we're trying to talk.
Well, can you get that sometimes? How do you transition? That's one of
my, yeah, my go-to lines from when I was early doing magic, restaurant magic early. Hello, good evening. My name is Bibbick, and I'm doing some magic here. Would you like to see some magic? We're trying to talk.
I guess
so,
not.
Also,
then.
It comes to the other thing about that is that, you know, with experience, you know when to approach the table and when not to approach the table and which tables to approach. You know, you learn about food service and the flow of the meal. You learn about couples that are there on first dates. You learn about couples that are there breaking up. You know, you learn a lot about people doing those things. So it's pretty cool.
I like to break up during over tacos. I feel like that's probably like, because no matter what,
yeah.
Hey, tacos. I'll at least, you know, I'll pay for the next round of tacos.
There will be
no
tacos,
problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, no matter what.
Tacos always break, you know, so it's kind of appropriate. Mm-hmm. It's symbolic, yeah.
Very symbolic. Mm. You know, and especially on Tuesday.
Oh, exactly.
So you, how did you end up in Chicago?
Well, I took a wrong turn in Kalamazoo, and here I am.
I must have taken that left at Albuquerque.
Oh, yeah. Last step.
So you dug a burrow under the ground.
Well, actually, the resort, Nipperszink, that I spoke of earlier, that was what got me to Chicago because it's only 60 miles from Chicago. It's near Lake Geneva. And many of the clientele was from Chicago, a great deal of them. And I made a lot of friends there that lived in Chicago. So when I got out of college, I'm looking for what to do. So my choices seemed to be stay in Detroit, live with my mom, and fight Al the Only for jobs. Or I can go to Chicago where I know a bunch of people and it's a great town and there's unlimited opportunity here. And a buddy of mine's got an apartment on the north side and he's happens to have an opening in his apartment starting in the fall. So there it was. I moved to Rogers Park, Illinois. Rogers Park, Chicago, up on the north side, up along the lake. And that was in 1985.
That was
40 years ago. You weren't even born 40 years ago.
I was. I was 2 years old.
Oh,
yeah.
See,
I just I have really good lighting, and again, I am a ChatGPT AI. Yeah, I'm not real. No. So you've been a key part of the Chicago magic community for decades. What you just said that there's unlimited opportunity in Chicago.
Sure.
What makes performing there unique or special compared to other places that you've been?
I think that audiences are very receptive here. I think that, you know, Midwest, we're down to earth here. You know, we don't have the pretension of New York or L.A., although, I don't know if that's necessarily true either, I think. Of course, if we can get deep for a moment here, Todd, where everybody out there is a reflection of who we are. So, you know, there are great people everywhere. I've traveled the country and, you know, you always meet great people everywhere. It's a little more, I shouldn't say that necessarily. I should just say that magic is well known in Chicago. You know, it's known to be done. It's been a long Chicago magic legacy of restaurants and bars and performers. And gosh, going back to Blackstone, you know, he took his name from the hotel, allegedly, or the cigar, allegedly. We don't know which one. Maybe he was standing at the Blackstone Hotel having a Blackstone cigar. I don't know exactly what happened. But, you know, magicians all the way along, Burt Ellerton, and of course, Jay Marshall and Fran all these years, Magic Incorporated. Still one of the greatest magic shops in the country. You know, just such a great magic history here.
Yeah, it seems like there's everywhere you turn, a lot of roads lead to Chicago.
That's true.
Close-up magic.
Yeah.
Eugene Berger.
Exactly. I was just going to say that. Yeah.
I mean, that's – so me coming into magic kind of late, 2009, I missed a lot of the history, and so I have to go back and But so I'm very more familiar with Eugene Berger and the close up kind of that kind of generation of performer. So how did you come across become like the house magician of the Chicago Magic Lounge?
Well, I started out in the garage. Actually, I was the garage.
That's how you did. Yeah, there you go.
And then I got to be the sidewalk magician for a couple of days. And then sure enough, next thing you know, boom, they brought me into the house. So that's pretty cool. None of that story is true.
We went from the bottom.
You've had some of the other performers here. Obviously, you've had Ben talking mm-hmm. about the lounge. And so you know that when we started out, it was a one night a week thing in a rented theater. And that the format, I'm not sure if you know this or not, the format, or if any of our radio listeners at home, the format was a show. And then after the show was going to be an open mic for magicians. And the idea was that if you go to a comedy open mic, you'll get 2 minutes, 3 minutes. Here at this magic thing, you could do 10 minutes or more if you wanted to. So I started going to that right away, within like a month of them opening. I knew that it was happening. Cool. I didn't really know that it was opening at the moment. But I started showing up right away and doing these you know, late night open mics. So right away, my talent was recognized and appreciated, of course. And they started booking me, of course, to work it. And then one night they put me in the bar because there were table magicians, there were stage shows. And originally when they opened up, this is a, I don't know how many people know this. The original plan was that since it was only one night a week, that they would have the same headliner for a month. So that person would do four shows. And when Joey, the owner, told me about that, this is before they opened, I thought it was a terrible idea. You know, why would you want that? Don't you want different things every week? I thought it was a terrible idea until he booked me for a month. Ah, and fair. Then I thought it was brilliant. So we had the stage performers, and then we had table performers and a bar person. And then after the main show, you go to the back room and see another little close-up show. So that's kind of the format we've maintained ever since. And they put me behind the bar, and I said, well, okay, what can I do behind the bar? So having been in magic for so long, you know, I go to conventions or I go to meetings or swap meets, and I see some weird thing or some strange prop, and, you know, I grab it. I don't know what the hell I'm going to do with it necessarily, but, you know, somewhere along the way, it can all fit in. So all those gags sort of came together working at the bar there. So, you know, you never know what you're going to find. And you know, you can get some strange kinds of misdirection, like this one right here. Oh, my gosh. Squirrel.
Oh, jeez. There's a squirrel.
I know. Isn't that stupid?
I love that.
I know. It's stupid stuff.
That's the kind of thing that tickles my toes.
Right.
So how often, because you probably see a lot of repeat customers, because the bar part is open to the general audience.
Yes, it is.
So anyone can come in, even if you don't have a ticket for the show, which sell out 2 to 4 weeks in advance. Yeah. So do you find yourself wanting to add more, like change your routines up more often? Or do you find that just it's you keep this more of the same routines over time?
Well, you know, I've got a lot of stuff that I've done and have, you know, have done and can do and do. I still do.
Hey, your sign.
I'm 10. We do get a lot of regulars, and they're always fun to bring back. But sometimes they're coming back to see the stuff that I did before, you know, like the famous bunny rabbit trick.
Yeah, you so, get I
the greatest I love the magic of all time.
And would you say that's the best trick?
Oh, for sure, it is. Yeah,
yeah.
I think so anyway. Yeah.
Well, I saw you do it on the news, and I saw you talk in an interview about that.
Yeah.
That you know, and I what I really liked about that is you took something that I've seen a lot of kid show magicians do that, and it's almost like a throwaway. They do it before. I'll see them do it before the show, and just kind of like a throwaway gag. But you've actually turned it into a whole routine.
Oh yeah.
And you said you can the bar sings along with your silly song that you do.
That's true. That all happened kind of organically one night. Because I've done the bunnies for years, but I never really developed it like that. And I brought the bunny out one night, and I'm bouncing it around on the bar, and I just started making up some stupid song. And then I thought, well, this is pretty fun. I got a good response. I said, oh, you know, what else can I do with this? And so, you know, I do it a bunch of times, and then eventually the audience joins in. So I get a whole room of strangers singing some stupid song they never heard before. It's the greatest kind of magic there is.
Awesome. Do you ever have, is it like Lynyrd Skynyrd where people go, show us the bunnies?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Well, so you're performing, and I'm guessing it's more of a crowded and loud environment. How did you change what you do depending? I mean, is it harder to perform when there's more noise around, does it make any difference to you?
Well, we're mic'd, of course, but it definitely makes a difference because the thing about bar magic is it's 100% distractions. Somebody walks in, everybody in the audience jumps up because that's a person they've been waiting to see. Somebody walks out, somebody passes out. That doesn't happen too often. you know, a drink is dropped and glass breaks. You know, it's a million distractions. So you have to be totally relaxed with just rolling with it all. And, you know, you never really know what's going to happen. So, yeah, when it gets loud, like we're mic'd and there's good lights. So people know when there's a show going on. And, you know, I mean, sometimes people don't quite get the idea that it's a show bar, not just a talking bar. So sometimes we have to, you know, gently and suggest that people lower their voices.
So the fact that they came in through
a magic place, you know, people are there to see it.
I mean, the fact that they walked in through a fake door to get in, that's hard to believe. But I mean,
it's not. What do you mean fake? It's a dryer.
It's a dryer, a real dryer. And that's actually I asked Benjamin Barnes, if anyone ever came in to bringing laundry.
Mm-hmm.
And he said at first, yeah, do you still get people that bring their laundry into the building?
That I knew of.
What's that?
The bartenders I knew of did it, but I haven't heard about anything else. Although I'll tell you what, I got stuck in the dryer last week, actually coming in. I got stuck in the dryer. Yeah. That's why I'm so wrinkled.
What?
Shut up. That's my story. I'm sticking to it.
That's fantastic.
Well, it's not. Have you seen my wrinkles? Come on. I've got a bad camera. You can't see them.
I can't see the wrinkles. I can see, no matter how bad the video quality gets, you can't miss your eyebrows.
These are
some fantastic eyebrows.
These are extensions, actually. These are not my real eyebrows. I went for eyelash extensions. The technician had the hiccups. So now I'm stuck for 6 to 8 weeks. I don't know how long it takes.
Is that called the Eugene Levy?
It could be. I don't know.
Yeah.
How long do your extensions stay in?
It depends on where.
Yeah.
It's,
okay.
You know.
Yeah.
It's a couple weeks depending.
It's not too bad. Yeah. Yep. I don't know. The way it is. What are we gonna do?
One of the things I thought was kind of neat about you is a lot of magicians will kind of find a niche and kind of stick with it.
Yes.
It seems like you just do it all, like mentalism, stage, family shows, even hypnosis, hypnotist shows, which I think are all great. What drives you to want to be kind of that jack of all work?
Well, it's mainly a desire to eat on a regular basis. That is my main motivation in my career.
Pragmatic. Like it.
If I could also pay it just a couple of bills along the way, I don't have to pay them all. That is good. Well, I've just had a lot of opportunities over the year. Like most magicians start out doing kid shows like everybody else. And then once I hit my college years and I did the amusement park and then the resort, also in there for a summer, I worked, at amusement park doing an illusion show for Paul Osborne. It was amusement park magic show. So they'd open auditions. And so I and another guy were hired for it because it was a 7-day-a-week show. And so I did illusions for a summer. And the great part about that show is I didn't have to buy the illusions.
They were already there. Fantastic.
I know it. Yeah, I just had to kind of point and stuff. So, corporate shows, trade shows. You kind of do, if you do it full time, you kind of do with, what comes up.
Yeah.
And also what you go after, for sure.
Where did you learn the hypnosis?
Well, I was interested. I got interested in 1 year at Abbott's, actually. I was about maybe 16 or so. And there was a guy who was doing it there, and I thought that was pretty cool. So I bought the Ormond McGill hypnosis books that Abbott's carried. And I played around with it a little bit. And I in high school, I used to, at parties, I'd you know, put people to sleep and have them do funny things. But that was pretty easy because, you know, there were some.
Yeah.
Back then it was okay. We used to be able to do that thing.
I can't do that anymore.
I kind of left it aside. I mean, after, I don't know, got more into magic, I didn't really think much about it. And then, you know, probably over 20 years ago now, a good friend of mine, Chuck King, out of Lansing, Michigan, he started doing hypnosis shows. He said, hey, man, you should do this stuff too. It's you know, it's good money and it's, he's, I don't know if he said it was easy, but it's a different kind of show altogether. It's not really easy. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I said, okay, well, you know, I used to play around with it. I got some more hypnosis books and read through them again and kind of sort of learned the outline of a routine. I saw him several times because he would pass through Chicago doing comedy clubs. So whenever he was in the area in Milwaukee or in Indiana, I'd go see his show. So I'd seen it a bunch of times. And I said, you know, send me a show sometime that you can't do. So it didn't come from him, but my first show, you know, I got a call to do a prom party in the middle of Iowa in the middle of the night. So I drove out there and I was working off of notes. And, you know, it's my first show, but I've done, you know, a lot of shows. So, you know, it all worked. I said, this is great. And then the guy that came up to me that hired me for the show, he's actually a performer as well, but he doesn't do hypnosis. But he was somehow hooked up with this school. So he said, hey, man, that was a great show. He said, hey, you know, the guy we had last year, I think that was the first time he ever did a hypnosis show. I said, oh, really?
How dare he?
Come. My first time. So,
yeah, that's awesome.
So it all worked. And yeah, I did one over the weekend. It was at 3 in the morning, except the raffle went long and it was at 3:20 in the morning. So that's...
There you go.
Yeah.
What is it? How does it compare to doing like a regular magic show where you're going to have somebody come up? Because it seems like it's a lot less reliable. Or am I wrong?
Well, let me see. I don't know that it's less reliable. It's a whole different type of show. Because, you know, if you're doing a magic show, you're doing, hey, look at me. Look how cool I am. Look at this clever stuff I know. But a hypnosis show is really all about the people on stage and what they do. So, you know, as a hypnotist, you're really just a guide guiding them through this experience. But it's more challenging than a magic show because in a magic show, you know, okay, I'm going to do this trick, this trick, this trick, and then I'm in with this trick. All right. But in a hypnosis show, you have to, first of all, you know, you got to know about some psychology of how people's minds work and the physiology of it too, because it's an actual thing. You know, hypnosis is a real thing. We're all hypnotized every day on different levels. And we, you know, when you're thinking about something to the exclusion of everything else, that's basically what hypnosis is. It's just a trance state where you're concentrating on one thing to the exclusion of everything else. So, you know, you have to first of all realize who's going into the trance, who's relaxing into it. You have to take care of the comfort of the people on stage, make sure that they're not going to fall on the ground or hurt themselves in any way. You have to know where the show is starting and where it's going, but it's all based on the reaction of the people. So, you know, you have to be willing to maybe go different ways or let a bit play out maybe longer than normal. And then you have to think about keeping the audience entertained too, because if you're just directing all of your attention at the crowd on stage, then you're ignoring the audience. You got to be able to, you know, be present for the audience as well. So it really works on a lot of different levels, and it's kind of interesting about it. It's kind of one of the things I like about it. And
yeah, it seems
you know,
like
you can do some amazing things with people. And
what would you what's a good example of like a really zany thing that you've done?
Well, you know, there's classic things like making people forget their names or you know, where they live, where they're from. You can make people not be able to stand up out of a chair, not be able to sit down into a chair, stuff like that. There's a fun one that I do where I tell the kid that every time he hears me say hypnosis, his shirt's going to be on backwards, and he pulls his arms out and flips his shirt around. And at the end of the show, I say, hey, man, you know, I leave him with his shirt backwards. And at one point, he does it a couple of times, but at the end, I leave it with it backwards. So at the end of the show, I could say, hey, man, what's up with your shirt? So, but the funnest thing that I do, it's a little bit harder to do now than it used to be, but, I don't even want to give this secret out, but here's the deal. I talk about, I ask anybody, if anybody on stage likes chocolate. So whoever raises their hand, all right, well, then I get them up out of their chair and they come forward and I say, hey, I'm staying at this really fancy hotel and they give us these little chocolates in our room. So you can have one. It's delicious. It's white chocolate. It's beautiful. And what I'm holding up is a bar of hotel soap. And then I have a couple of extras and I kind of toss them out in the audience. I say, hey, anybody else want a piece of chocolate? Here, you can have a piece of chocolate. So the people in the audience all get a piece of soap. The guy on stage has a piece of cheese, white cheese, wrapped up in the
so good
in the soap wrapper. So he unwraps it and he starts eating it because I tell him it's delicious chocolate. So the people on stage, in the audience, think this guy's eating a bar of soap. The guy on stage thinks he's eating chocolate, and I'm the only one who knows he's got a piece of cheese.
God, that is great. That's like a private in-joke just for you.
I've also had him wash it down with Windex. I have a bottle of Windex, and I unscrew the sprayer and give it to him to drink.
It also that prevents them from taking their clothes off and running around.
Exactly, yes.
Keeps them from streaking.
It's not Windex. That's all I can say.
That sounds... That sounds worse than Windex.
Well, you wash it out enough, it's okay.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah. So really, that's kind of the ultimate improv training. You call yourself a comedy conjurer.
Yes.
Why do you think comedy and narrative are so important in your magic
story? Well, it certainly makes it more entertaining. If you watch a non-comedy act, like a manipulation act, I think it's interesting to a degree. But then it's hard for magicians to know what people are thinking. We can't figure it out. But do
aren't
they
you a mentalist?
Pardon me?
Aren't you a mentalist? That's your job.
I am a psychic and a mentalist.
Oh, got it. So you do both.
Yes, I'm a psychic and a mentalist. I am a cyclist.
Got it.
See you on the trails.
Probably more accurate.
I don't know. Sometimes magic to me is more of a if you're watching a manipulation act, you realize the practice that goes in and the skill involved. But the entertainment value after a while is sort of kind of, I don't know how entertaining it is after a while. I don't know. Got to have some comedy with the magic. Come on. It's like having music with no melody. Oh, that's a good one.
How do you practice your improv? Other than just doing it over and over again? Or is there anything that you do specifically to keep you sharp?
Well, I think one thing I've done over the years is I've read a ton of joke books.
Okay.
And I still continue to buy and read joke books. And you can go through a whole joke book and you can know all the jokes you read. You could have heard them in the past. But then there's that one that you find that makes it in my personal joke book because I keep a book of things that I think of or things that I read or hear. And so I think I think improv is based on foundation, really. And the broader your foundation can be, the better the improv can be. Because a lot of the jokes that I use repeatedly were an ad lib originally. So, or something that I thought about that I could set up a situation. Like, did I do that? I did that stupid joke earlier about making M's meet with the mics and the marks. So that's a joke I use at the bar. As I'm doing my show, I'm getting people's names and I can memorize the whole bar. And we could see I can do about 25 names or so. And so when I get two people with M as their first initial, I introduce them to each other. And then I say, hey, I'm just trying to make M's meet.
That's good.
So that joke was kind of cooked up in my head. And, you know, I can recreate the situation. So it seems like an ad lib. But, you know, I've thought about it a lot. By the way, the joke also works for people with N names, which is how the game started. I thought
trying to make ends meet.
Yeah, ends meet. But there are more M names than N names. Mm. But there you go.
I mean, that's probably something. that's probably something you get a lot of is just very interesting names.
Oh, for sure.
What's your technique for doing names? Do you do like is there like a specific, there's a lot of techniques out there for learning.
Oh, for memorizing names?
Yeah, memorizing. Which one do you use?
Well, I use the Bibic routine, the Bibic method. It's a very popular
What's the Bibic method?
Well, the first thing you have to do is to look at the person when you ask them their name. All right. Because oftentimes we look at, we won't look at somebody. Hey, what's your name? And if you're not looking at them, you're not going to hear it. So first you must make sure that you hear the name. And if you don't hear the name or are uncertain of what you heard, you have to say, what did you say? Or pardon me, what was that? Tell me again, please. So you have to actually listen for the name. And then you repeat it. Oh my gosh, Todd. Well, it's great to see you here, Todd. Have you been here before, Todd? All right, maybe not three times in one sentence or what.
Yeah, you better be careful. You get wishes if you do that.
Right, exactly. So that's what it is. It's a combination, for me anyway, it's a combination of visual connection and verbal repetition. And the cool thing is, oftentimes, people come into the bar before the show at the lounge. I'll learn their names. I'll go into the show. And then they come out 2 hours later and I say, okay, bye, Tommy. Take care, Janet. And so they're always more impressed with that than anything else you do. So it's a good skill to learn, is learning people's names. And people love their names.
Yeah.
And when it comes to unusual names, I do have a little book at the bar that I keep unusual names in. I collect names because I believe your name is the most powerful magic word. And if you live your life right, your name lives on. And if you live your life wrong, your name lives on. So do it right. So I write their names in this book, and then I show them, I reveal the cover of the book. And this, again, is one of those old bar gags that I got 100 years ago. The title of the book is My List. I don't do it to everybody, but it's a great gag, and I've done it 1,000 times because I'll bet you I easily have 1,000 names in that book.
That's awesome. How long is the book? How long is the bar open? Like, I know you do like time on, time off. You're not there like the whole time.
You're present, but I'm not working the whole time. So the bar opens at 5, and between 5 and 6 o'clock, you never know who's going to be there. Could be people waiting at 5 o'clock when the door opens. There could be nobody show up until 5:45, but around 6 o'clock for sure, people start coming in because the show starts. Seating for the show starts at 7, and the bar is the lobby for the theater also. So a lot of people come into the bar, they may not even have a drink, but they're waiting to be seated for the show. So from 5 to 6, I'll do some sort of what I call warm-up magic, and I'll do it's a little bit more impromptu, and as people are coming in, it's shorter, quicker tricks. That's a secret, one of the secrets of bar magic. You have to do kind of quick stuff that is easy to follow and not very complicated. Because, people don't have the attention span for it. And and then at 6 o'clock, I'll do an actual set on microphone and with lights. And that'll be about 20 minutes. And by 6:30, we're full. So about 6:40, I'll do my main set before the seating. And that's about another 20 minutes. And then about 7 o'clock, the little gongs ring and people are seated in for the show. So then after that, you never know who's going to come in between 7 o'clock and 9 o'clock. So people come in, like you said earlier, anybody could come in, have drinks. So sometimes it's busy, sometimes it's slower. Friday and Saturdays, it's busy. But, Thursdays can be a little bit slower. Sundays can be a little bit slower in between. Then at 9 o'clock, the show gets out, and people come back to the bar if they want to stick around and watch more magic. So I'll do another set then. And then from there, it's sort of, see who's in the crowd, who's in the, who comes in, who stays. On Friday and Saturday nights, we have 2 bar magicians. So I work the early shift, and then about 9:30, the second person comes in and does the rest of the night. Thursdays, I'm there all night, and Sundays, I'm there all night.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. This is a turn, but what is something about performing magic that you think would surprise someone who's not a magician?
I think that one thing is that how much people can be entertained by very simple things. Magic is, surprising, and it's unusual, and it gets a good response. But oftentimes what the magician is doing is can be very simple in execution. So I think that's the response. That's a good way to put it. The response is always greater than the effort. I shouldn't say always. God, it's often so greater than the effort put in. That so is that's cool. You know, scream at, you know, like the bunny rabbit trick is not technically complicated, but when those people open up their hand and there's a million bunnies in their hands.
That's my favorite. I know the best thing is I know how it's done and it's still good. It's one of the things I could just watch, even because I know it, what's going to happen. I like it. And
that's
I have to
really
say,
the secret of a great bar trick is a trick that people have seen before and still want to see again on other people. That is the real secret of a great bar trick.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I learned something interesting about rabbits is they eat their own poop. Yeah, their metabolism. Well, my dogs eat their poop too. So it's absolutely true. What they do is because they don't process their metabolism so fast, they get very little nutrition out of the first round. So they eat their pellets again to get more.
This whole interview is over. I can't go on any further.
This is it. Oh, you're getting upset about poop jokes now?
Yeah.
How do you recommend the amateurs develop their own voice or style of magic rather than copying others? Because of all the videos that are out there, there's a lot less people kind of developing their own voice. How do you recommend we do that?
Well, I think we've all come up on other people's ideas and routines and thoughts. So it's important to learn other stuff and see other performers and how they do it. But it can be a kind of a long journey to find your own voice and to find your own. And some people never find it. That's okay too. It isn't necessarily that it's bad, because some people only want to do magic for fun and, you know, a little bit of fun with their friends. And that's fine. They don't really need to be making any kind of statement necessarily or. But I don't know. Isn't that the universal question about who are we and what do we want to convey to other people? So it's a journey. It's all I can tell you. Got to be truthful, I guess. Got to be true to yourself.
Yeah. Right? That's accurate.
Yeah.
What do you think you would have done if you never took up magic? Like, what would your life look like?
Well, that's a good question. A good and fairly easy question to answer, because I grew up in a family of mechanical geniuses.
Okay. Tell me more.
Well, my dad had a refrigeration shop when we were growing up, heating and cooling. And I have four older brothers. And so we had to go to work at dad's shop. And when you had two numbers in your age, two numbers. When you were 10, you had to go to the shop and go to work. And, you know, when I was 10, of course, I'm cleaning the john and sweeping the floor. But we fixed a lot of stuff, and I'd, you know, go on service calls with some of the guys, my brothers, and he had a couple of other service guys working for him. And so, you know, throughout the years, we learned how to fix stuff. My brothers were always fixing cars and motorcycles, and, you know, I was building stupid stuff, and so probably something along the mechanical lines, I guess, like that.
Okay.
I still do stuff. I still, you know, build a lot of props, and I got to rebuild my magic table, actually, because it fell over and broke.
Oh. But,
I'm pretty handy with the tools, so probably something.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
See, that's something I never would have known. All right, you ready for the quick last three questions?
Yeah,
don't
sure.
Require a lot of thought. You just throw them out.
Talking about almost an hour.
Oh, an hour. But it doesn't mean we have to stop, but I just have
the same glass of champagne. That's the incredible part right there.
Is that like a never ending?
It's a magic glass.
That's got to be a gag, right?
Take that out of the frame for now. Yes. Or, okay. What are the questions? Yes.
Okay. Three questions.
Yes.
What's your advice for amateur magicians to take the step toward performing full time?
Don't do it. I don't need the competition.
Love
it. Next question.
What's your favorite? Next question. What's your favorite magic book?
Oh, wait. Let me go back to the first question.
Okay. You can actually answer.
The real answer is to perform all you can and call people and perform for free and don't let them take advantage of you, but be willing to do stuff for free and get a chance to perform for people. Look out venues. Somebody wise, and I can't remember who it was, a magician, he said, we create our own venues, right? Like nobody's going to call you up and say, oh, you're the greatest magician. You know, come and work here. Yeah, sure, that worked for me, but come on, look at me. but like all the restaurant gigs I've ever had, it was me going after them, pretty much. Mm. I mean, there's one exception, but every restaurant gig, it's always been, you know, I'm going to go to them and say, hey, this is what I can do, and let me do it here. And they say no, and then eventually somebody says yes. So yeah, I'd say that's the main thing for going toward professional is to work as much as you can.
Perfect. What's your favorite magic book?
My favorite magic book. I had a few growing up. I liked the Encyclopedia of Magic. That was a good one. I liked the Mark Wilson course. Tarbell's.
Nope.
I mean, Tarbell's the
good one.
The foundation, right? Everything's yeah. Tarbell. We had a guy come through the magic lounge recently. I said, "Oh, that's a great trick, Tarbell." So yeah, I would say along those lines, Carol Fox, growing up in Detroit, Carol Fox was also a mentor and he was a very funny guy. So he wrote several books. I treasure his books. Tom Mullica, Showtime with Tom Foolery. And that was great. That's a great bar book. He was a great guy. He was at Abbott's a lot. I didn't really know him that well, but he was there frequently and he was hilarious. And
just watching him eat all those cigarettes is amazing, a sight to behold.
Yeah.
Ugh, that's it's hard to watch, but I can't look away. Wild.
I know it's.
All right. Last one. Knowing what you know now with the gift of foresight, mm-hmm. what advice would you give a young, amazing Bibbick?
Get off the toilet. I'm trying to brush my teeth.
That is very introspective.
I think everyone needs to hear this message, and that is don't be afraid to take risks, right? That's always a good one. I mean, there are things Absolutely. That maybe I passed up on because I wasn't sure about, and who knows what would happen. But yeah, I mean, go for it. What do you got to lose? All they can say is no.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
How do we find your schedule for when you're going to be at the – well, we know you're there every Thursday and every Sunday.
Every Thursday through Sunday.
Thursday through Sunday.
I'm doing a private party.
Okay.
Right.
So unless you're doing a private party, we can find you at the Magic Lounge. Where else we can find you on social media? What's your Instagram? Yeah, that's true.
The Amazing Bibbick at Instagram. And Jeff Bibbick on the Facebook.
That's all the time we have for today's episode. The Amazing Bibbick, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate you taking the time to sit down with us and tell us your story. So thank you.
Thank you very much. And everyone out there, don't forget to floss.
That's the man. If you like what we're doing here, please like and subscribe on YouTube so you can watch us in glorious video.
Smash that button.
Yeah, smash it.
What the kids say, I don't know.
Spoken like true boomers that we are. And follow and rate the podcast so we can spread the word that magic is for everyone. I'm Dr. Todd. This is Magician's Workshop, and we will see you next time. That you did it, man. That was awesome.